This is Guildcast, episode 17, for March 5th, 2006. Welcome back, everyone, to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and this episode will be all about the ranger's best friend, the animal companion, better known as the pet. Later on, I'll discuss most aspects of the pets and some general guidelines on technical specifics and what a pet can offer your character. And I'm not just talking about fetching your slippers. I'll also go into the two main skills needed to have a pet and to keep it alive. First off, though, staying true to tradition, I wanted to say hi to a few people from the game. There is Chaos Age Imperfect, Opal Frostkipple, Sirius Black Dragon, Sam the Ranger, Hinakai, Elisar Incanus, Logan Stahl, Bathel Nasp, who actually contributed some great items for contest prizes, Grail Bane, Mage Hottie, and Garrett Risen. And for some pretty exciting news relating to the website, we've reached 250,000 hits last month, which is something I was not expecting at all, but I'm very thankful to everyone who has spread the good word. Also, I wanted to touch on a few emails I've gotten this week, and then play a voicemail I've received. The first email is from Chaos Dark Phoenix, and he asks, "How can I get to the Underworld and the Fissure of Woe, and what's the difference between an ascended character and a non-ascended one?" Well, CDP, thanks for the email, and I'm going to only briefly go over this first question because I plan on making an entire show in the Underworld one day, and one on the Fissure of Woe also. But to get to the Underworld, there are a few ways to get there, depending on which part you want to go to. One way is to go to the Temple of Ages and kneel before the statue of Grenth. Now, it's important to note that the Grenth spirit will not appear unless your region has favor of the gods, and by region I mean America, Europe, Korea, or Japan. When you first enter TOA, it will tell you who has favor. Then, after you kneel and he appears, you'll need to pay it 1 platinum to get down there. You also access Fissure of Woe through TOA by kneeling in front of the statue of Balthazar in the same way. The other way to get to a different section of the Underworld is at the Tomb of the Primeval Kings, accessible through the Dragon's Lair. This is often referred to as the New UW, Tombs, Tombs UW, or actually a more accurate name according to Tyrian lore, is the Rift. Here you don't need to pay anything, nor do you need favor. Now, as for your ascension question, there is a difference, and ascension is one of those things in the game that's related directly to the storyline. Basically, ascension is the process that your character must go through in order to be able to battle the Forgotten Ones. It's a rite of passage in a way, I guess, but you need to do it in order to defeat the game. There's no armor bonus like there is with Infusion or anything like that. It's simply a storyline progression that must be done in order to continue through and beat the game. Now here's another email from Master Zodos. He says, "In the Majesty's Rest region, is there any significance to the 4 bone dragons and the dragon boss on that area surrounded by the moat, or are they just there to scare people?" Now, from what I've seen, there is no real significance to these bone dragons. I remember a while back, one of my guildies brought me out there and showed me that area, and I actually asked him the exact same thing that you asked. But yeah, I believe it's just there to scare people. Another email comes from Tasselhoff Burfoot, and he says, "My friends keep scamming people, and I don't like it. Do you know if there's a way to report? I don't want my friends losing their account. They say there isn't a way to report, but I'm sure there's a way." Yep, Tass, there is a way to report scams, and I've heard of several people having their accounts banned, actually, for scamming. Or more likely, they get banned for abusing other characters. And what you do is you simply go to support.guildwars.com and fill out a support ticket on their Ask a Question form, reporting the violation you've seen. Now, there's some important details you need to include in that form, and such things as the name of the character being reported, the name of the character you were playing at the time of the encounter, the time of the incident with the time zone included, the name of the map zone where the incident took place, or even the location within the zone, a description of the offending action, dialogue, or name, a screenshot of the incident. Please ensure any screenshots are in JPEG or GIF format. and under 2 megabytes in size before you attach them to your message, and also any other details that you feel are relevant. Be aware, though, that because of ArenaNet's privacy policy, they cannot update you on the results of your report, but they do consider these violation reports very serious.
Hello, Sean. Master Zoto's calling from Beresford, South Dakota, right near Sioux Falls. I just have a question for you. What is the best and easiest way to make screenshots from in-game? Thanks for your time, and I love the show. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that call, Master Zotos. And it looks like you got yourself an email and a voicemail in the same show. The best and only way I've found to take a good screenshot in Guild Wars is to press the Print Screen button. And if you want to hide all the interface extras like the skill bar and the menus and all that, you hold down the Shift key while pressing Print Screen. It will then tell you on your screen where on your computer that screenshot was saved. Now, I wanted to say that I do appreciate the emails I get, but lately they've been getting to the point of overwhelming a bit. And that's certainly no complaint by me. I'm not complaining at all, but since I do hate when I have to skip over an email and not read it on the show, or do like I've done today and actually only read parts of an email, I've decided that after this episode, I will no longer read emails on each show, but instead I'll dedicate possibly one show a month, or even possibly do a bonus fifth show midweek sometime, where it's just all questions and answers, where I'll just read the emails and answer them all on one show. This was actually a suggestion by Amber Red, a.k.a. Hikari Link on the message boards, and I think it makes sense considering the amount of emails coming in now. And speaking of Amber Red, he will be contributing to the show in the near future after Factions is released, and he prepared a statement as the announcement of his contributions. And this is his statement. We are at an awkward time now in Guild Wars. The PvP preview is behind us. The PvE preview is coming within the month. The solid Factions release date has yet to be announced. As it comes close, so does the need for better coverage of all aspects of the Guild Wars universe. I will take it onto myself to help deliver the latest news about the opposing factions and the alliances that battle in their names. As alliances shall rise and fall, as cities and strategic areas become the temptation that many wish to possess, I, Amber Red, shall bring you the news of the ever-changing world of factions weekly here on Guildcast. May the strength of the worlds be with you.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. In answer to something that I said in the episode about Dai, and I said I didn't know why it seems that Dai drops more often in pre-searing than post, I got an email explaining why. This is from a fellow named Juno Onuj, who said, "The reason people Dai farm in pre is because the variety of drops is much lower in pre-searing as opposed to post. In other words, there's tons of stuff that drops in post, but not in pre. But every color of Dai can drop in pre or post. Therefore, your chances of having a Dai drop are much higher in pre-searing. I hope that clears it up a bit." Well, that does clear that up. Thanks, Juno. If anyone would like to contact me, you can do so at ladysinea@gmail.com. That's LadySinaea at gmail.com. I also spoke this past week with a person named, I hope I say this right, Pew Wade, who said hi and said that he liked the show. And he's a technical writer from the Philippines, so he was nice enough to explain to me how different types of microphones work. So thank you for that, Wade. He also asked how Sean and I coordinate when recording this show. Well, the way it goes right now is Sean and I actually don't record at the same time. We record separately, and then he does all the work of editing them together and adding the music and everything. We're not, like, in the same room talking to each other or anything like that, but maybe one of these days we'll have an actual live conversation. Okay, now the theme for this week is pets. Pets, of course, fall under the Ranger's control. Some people don't care for pets much because they occupy at least 2 spots on your skill bar, one for charm animal and another for reviving your pet after it dies. Some people will choose to only use 1 skill and they only bring charm animal. But unless you're very sure that your pet's not going to die, it's not wise to leave your reviving skill behind, because if you can't revive your pet and it dies, then Charm Animal becomes useless and you just have a wasted slot on your skill bar. The common res spell is Comfort Animal, which you can also use to heal your pet. There's another one called Revive Animal, and it can resurrect all of the pets nearby, but in order to use it, you have to be standing right next to the pets. So you kind of have to wait until after a battle's over in order to use the skill. If your ranger is the designated puller, sometimes your party will insist that you leave your pet behind. Your pet will attack the same target that you do, but sometimes it also aggroes enemies that you didn't intend to pull. So, especially in higher level missions or trickier bonuses, you might want to consult your party members and ask them if they're fine with the fact that you're bringing a pet. If you merely target a foe, but you don't attack, your pet won't go after them. But if you target, say, a distant enemy and then you start to run towards them, your pet will automatically start to run toward them too. If you break off your attack early enough and don't start hitting the enemy, then this will call your pet back to you. In other words, if they haven't yet started to attack, they'll run back to you. My ranger's current favorite haunt is in Tombs, going green farming in the new UW. The favored ranger party that you'll see advertised everywhere consists of one monk, one minion master, one orders necro, and five barrage rangers that have level 20 pets. If your pet isn't yet level 20, but it's kind of close, it's not really a problem because they level really fast in Tombs. I've also gone in a group that didn't have an orders necro, or the necro that we had was being both the minion master and orders. I've gone in a group that didn't have a monk, and all of these different builds did work, but the team of one healer, one minion master, one orders, and the rest pet barrage rangers seems to be the fastest and most efficient. As of now when I'm recording this, I haven't yet gone into Tombs since the March 2nd update, so I don't know exactly how the orders build has been affected. The skill Order of the Vampire has been changed a bit, so I don't know if that build is going to need to be tweaked a little bit, or even if people are going to stop bringing in an Order's Neck altogether. Either way, I think it'll still be fine, because we used to form groups with six Barragers anyway, so it'll still work. It's expected that your team will be bringing Favorable Winds, Winnowing, and Interrupts, something that'll interrupt the meteor storms and such. I also always bring Throw Dirt and Tiger's Fury. You could also bring Color Protection if you wanted. As always, you should coordinate with your teammates and see who's bringing what and who has what level spirits. It's a good idea to have someone also bring a backup spirit in case someone in your party drops from the game partway through the run. Just the other day, I had to teach someone that two spirits of the same kind don't stack, so you should make sure everyone knows who's going to be the one in charge of putting up the spirit and who's going to be the backup, so that you always have the most powerful spirit up at any given time. You also want to make sure that you bring interrupts to stop the driders and the worm sieges. I like Concussion Shot and Distraction Shot. Concussion Shot is awesome because the animation is huge and funny, and it works well too. It leaves your opponent dazed for long enough, usually for you to finish them off before they try to cast another spell on you. Now the pets. Each ranger should bring a pet. It is also expected that you bring Comfort Animal, as you'll be responsible for your own pet. I've used Revive Animal for a team before, and it allowed everyone else to be able to bring an extra skill since they didn't have to bring Comfort Animal themselves, but it was so not worth it. For one thing, the pets don't all necessarily die in the same place, so you have to go over to one group and resurrect them. Then you go over to where another pet is and wait forever for your skill to recharge, and then you res the next group. So you're sitting there for like 2 minutes reviving all the pets. It just makes the run go slower. So minimum, what you need to bring is Barrage, Charm Animal, and Comfort Animal. Some teams will ask you that you resurrect your pet as often as possible, even if it's during a battle and your pet just dies again. The reason for this is every time your pet dies, it leaves a new corpse behind and allows your minion master to make a new minion and strengthen his army. This is one of the reasons that Comfort Animal is favored, because you can resurrect your pet from a little distance away, and you don't have to be right next to it. Other teams will prefer that you wait until the battle is over in order to res your pet, because the pet can add some additional randomity and cause more aggro trouble if you're not careful. So that's another thing to check. Or as you start playing, feel out the group and see what they say about rezzing pets during battle, and just go with their plan and flow. So, that's all I'm going to say on the subject for now. Until next time, this has been Lady Sinea and my cute little pet lizard, bringing you the word on the street. For Guildcast's Ascalon News, this is Lady Sinea reporting. Today's top story, visit Cantha. Boasting a sea of jade and a petrified forest, the lovely scenery of the distant Cantha will soon become within reach. With three nations on the single continent, visitors to Cantha are sure to find something to their liking. In a special preview weekend, which will begin on March 24th, citizens of both Ascalon and Kryta alike will be able to visit this strange new land. Jiazhu Tai, who can be found at the dock of Lion's Arch, says that she anticipates that every space on board her ships will be filled for the voyage south. If you wish to bring along a friend to explore Cantha, this reporter recommends that they reserve their seats early. In other words, have your friend download the client before the preview event. Hang on to your pocketbooks, men. With travel to the exotic Cantha, your female companions will be sure to want to visit the local shops. Although it's unlikely that many of the higher-end stores will be open to us outsiders right away, once extended stays in Cantha are permitted, there are sure to be plenty of lovely new outfits that your lady friends will want you to buy for them. For those of you who wish to leave your mark and make a permanent impact upon the world, one way in which to do this is to design a new guild emblem and submit it to the ArenaNet Heraldry Association. Winning submissions will be seen adorning the capes of guilds for generations to come. Start designing now, because the deadline of April 7th may come up quicker than one might expect. For full details on this contest, check out this week's show notes on guildcast.com or visit the official Guild Wars website. In home life, new residential zoning allows for two more residents to live under a single roof. Building Commissioner ArenaNet has announced that they understand Ascalon's desire to mingle with the denizens of Cantha. For this reason, if you are currently a homeowner in Ascalon, you will soon be allowed to house two more members, in addition to your current limit of a family of four. This will allow participants to enjoy the company of both a ritualist and an assassin. Mind you, this requires that you pay the small fee of purchasing a copy of Guild Wars Factions for any original home that you may wish to upgrade. Monks on strike. This past week, Thunderhead Keep was flooded with a deluge of monks who all decided to go on strike. Chanting until the snow nearly avalanched, the monks kept up the stir for nearly a day. Although the exact demands of the monks were unclear, it seems that the intangible commodity of respect was high on the list. This reporter advises all mediocre monks to lighten up, it's just a game, and to remember that experienced players are able to recognize a good healer when they see one. In education news, the Ascalon Academy has just announced new updates to their skill training curriculum. Many citizens have been waiting anxiously for this update, praying to Duena that their favorite skills would not be destroyed. Each class has had several skill changes, which will certainly affect various builds. However, this reporter is pleased to announce that, contrary to most speculation, her Invincimonk has not been nerfed, and indeed can still cut foes to ribbons as she has done before. This reporter and Sean, your Guildcast host, will endeavor to keep you apprised of any changes as this story develops. In business news, fissure armor now cheaper than ever. Although still far above the average soldier's price range, fissure armor is becoming a realistic goal for many middle-class citizens of Ascalon. While the price of the armor remains the same, the Eternal Forge boutique being that it is, the price of one of the rare materials which is used to craft the upscale garments has fallen steeply. The stock of Ectoplasm Incorporated, which up until recently had enjoyed a price of upwards of 12K, has plummeted to a mere 6.5. Although it has now risen back up to 7.5, it has nowhere near recovered its former value. This steep decline has concerned many Ecto stockholders and, fearing that the price may drop further, have begun selling at a mad rate. Others, gambling on a bet that this is merely a temporary slump, have been buying up as much of the stock as possible. Many former Ecto shareholders have been buying into the not new, but recently sought after Ruby and Sapphire trade. It is unknown whether the popularity that Ruby and Saf are currently enjoying is warranted, for it is not certain what these organizations even do. representatives of each of the corporations, Ecto, Ruby, and SAF, were unavailable for comment. However, financial consultant Ornhelm Breitaxe of Drachner's Forge suggests that if you have the intent to purchase the coveted fissure armor, or merely wish to stockpile Ecto, now is the time to do it. This reporter tends to agree, but questions whether it is a wise idea to take financial advice from a dwarf. In local news, Loudon Swain claims to be best monk ever. Swain, self-proclaimed super healer, announced yet again that anyone who parties with him should feel honored and privileged to have him in their group. A guildmate of Swain's, who asked to remain anonymous, said, quote, Loudon failed to mention that since the other monks went on strike, he's by default the best, because he's the only one left. Reports of Swain's healing prowess remain unconfirmed, but this reporter did witness Swain entering the local tavern and calling for someone to buy him a beer as a reward for an exceptionally well-executed heal. Good news, boys! Devona of Rin is now single. The pretty young warrioress has severed ties with an unnamed male friend who no one will admit had been her boyfriend. Rumor has it Sin of Sirmia was seen holding hands with Devona's beau, but neither would answer this reporter's requests for an interview. Aiden of the Cree Foothills, mutual friend of the two feuding women, shoved this reporter away from Devona's tent and said, quote, Why don't you leave her alone? There are plenty more important things you could be investigating right now, rather than prying into the poor girl's life. This statement has brought up the following questions. How is Aiden involved in this tangle? Is he merely protecting Devona, as any man would protect his little sister? Or has the brave young woman caught his eye in a different light? Whatever the reason, it is clear something is being kept hidden. No further information could be obtained, however, for this reporter barely escaped with her life as an arrow whistled past her ear. This has been Lady Sinea reporting for Guildcast's Ascalon News.
And now on to the game updates themselves. First off, there was some discussion with Gail Gray lately in one of her regular appearances at Lion's Arch. The most noteworthy topic she discussed was an official announcement of the character slots available on the new Factions campaign. Lady Sinea touched on this a bit in her new segment, but I wanted to discuss the comparison between merging and not merging your accounts. Gail says that if you buy Factions as a standalone game, you can have 4 character slots, but if you merge your Factions account with your Chapter 1 account, you will only get 2 extra slots. The upside of this merge is that you'll have your original 4 characters plus 2 new ones to explore the lands of both games freely. If you don't merge, sure, you'll have 8 characters, but 4 of them will be stuck in Chapter 1 only, and 4 will be stuck in Chapter 2 only. So there are pros and cons to both choices. Basically, 6 characters with 100% content availability is more than 8 characters with 50% content availability, if that makes any sense. So consider what you would do with your characters before you make the decision to merge them or not. And it's important to remember that once you merge your 2 accounts, you can never unmerge them. Now, first I'll go over the small update that was on Tuesday, March 28th. They fixed unlocking of arenas so that the team arenas are unlocked for new accounts after 5 consecutive wins in the random arenas. Previously, they were incorrectly unlocked after 6 consecutive wins. And then there's this gigantic skill leveling update for Thursday, March 2nd. Now, I won't be reading every single skill update because there's 138 of them, and that would be incredibly boring, but you can read them for yourself at guildwars.com under the Game Updates section about halfway down the screen on the right-hand side. What I will be doing, though, is going over some of the major updates that I've noticed and ones that I had comment on. I'll also say the sequential number before each one as they appear on the updates list, in case you wanted to follow along at home. So, the number 6 update, you are no longer considered attacking, using a skill, or casting a spell while you are running to get in range of a target. Now, this is especially great in PvP when you'd be running up to a target to cast a spell, and you'd get interrupted without actually even being able to cast a spell. And this will make Mesmer's jobs a little more difficult, I think, or at least make them pay more attention to the distance of their enemies in PvP. And on number 9, they added 2 plus 30 health, receive damage negative 5, chance 20% shields to the PvP character creation screen. updated monster drops to make the receive damage negative 5 chance 20% drop possible. And this is something that I cannot wait to get my hands on, this shield here. Number 11, they reduced the Lieutenant's Helm Hex duration bonus to 20% and added it to the PvP character creation screen. So yeah, that much-loved Henge of Dunravi Lieutenant's Helm has been nerfed. Sorry, Drox runners. Number 36, the Order of the Vampire no longer triggers if you have other Necromancer enchantments on you. Yeah, this is big. This is a big deal, and it's pretty bad. Is it the end of the Order Necro as we know it? I sure hope not. Number 40, Firestorm, decreased cast time to 2 seconds. So now Orion can cast it faster at the end of the battle. Number 71, Heal Party, they increased recharge time to 2 seconds. I was actually holding on as one of the last people who actually liked this spell, despite its high energy cost. And then they go and do this. Number 73, Eviscerate, increased adrenaline cost to 8 swings. Well, I hate to say it, but goodbye axe farming, hello sword farming. Looks like the cost of swords is going to skyrocket here once again, and it pretty much already has since this update came out a couple days ago. And those chaos axes won't be quite as cool anymore. Well, okay, so they're still pretty cool, but you know what I mean. Number 74, I Will Avenge You, reduced attack speed to 25%. Fixed a bug that caused the skill to trigger off of dead ally minions. Aha! The much-anticipated end of Aiwei, or at least a slowdown of Aiwei. I can just picture all the warrior rangers now, wandering around aimlessly outside of the PvP arenas, with nothing to do, hopelessly reading the Guild Wars Guru forums in search of the next flavor of the moment. Just kidding, guys. Number 79, Shield Bash. Skill reworked. The next attack skill against you is blocked. If the attack was a melee attack, that skill is disabled for an additional 15 seconds, and the attacker is knocked down. Nice. I've always been a fan of the skill, but now it seems like it's a little bit better, especially what they've done with this and with the other shield-blocking stance skills. Number 95, Bull's Charge, now triggers on moving foes instead of fleeing foes. And this is something I just talked about last week, Bull's Charge, and so this is good that it works on moving foes now. It's a very cool improvement, I think, and it'll make it more effective in PvP. Number 115, Kepkit Marrow Feast, Queen of the Scarabs, has brought her brood to the desert, drawn by the plentiful corpses of Griffin, Minotaur, and even other scarabs. The insect brood now infests the Prophet's Path, so travelers be warned. Okay, now let me go over this one for a minute. This new scarab boss has a green drop called the Kepkit's Refuge, if I'm saying that right. It's basically a max damage holy staff that halves the casting speed and recharge time of protection prayer spells with a 20% chance. Enchantments last 20% longer, and it gives you plus 15 to energy. It's a pretty easy jog to reach this boss from Augury Rock, but beware of the scarabs surrounding her, the nesting scarabs, because they trap like crazy. You'll definitely need to do some good pulling with this one. Number 116, they removed chests from Dreadnought's Drift and Ice Flow. And I wonder if this includes that blasted chest in Ice Flow that was trapped with Azers. Number 117, they fixed a non-aggressive char group located in Regent Valley. Now, how did they know it wasn't just a bunch of peaceful char out there in the forest just picking berries and going on their merry way? Number 120, they fixed the entrance to Beacon's Perch from Lorner's Pass so that you can't sneak around the edge of the zone portal. Okay, who told Anet about this one? Now, I think it was one of the coolest things ever. Well, for about 10 seconds, actually. This is how it worked. You could walk back into Beacon's Perch on a secret spot, and it wouldn't zone you into the city. But instead, you'd be walking around the city alone once you went through the secret spot, but you were still considered outside. So you could even aggro the enemies that are near the entrance there, and you could lure them back into Beacon's Perch, which is always fun. Plus, there was this end-of-the-world graphic glitch that you weren't meant to see while you were in the city. I'll have to post some screenshots in the message board that I took a few weeks ago of that. Number 131, they fixed a bug in the Hungry Devourer quest that allowed the junipers to be killed before the players arrived, preventing the players from getting food for Joe. Yeah. This was always annoying, having to do that quest twice in order to get the 10 juniper meat for Joe. So thank you, Anet, and literally 2 days after I just did that quest with my newest character. Number 132, they fixed a bug in the Elementalist Path quest where the target NPC was not at its quest marker. Okay, that's good, but now they need to do this for the Kree Minotaur too. Seriously. Number 134, they fixed miscellaneous bugs with the Worm Monster AI. Now, they don't say exactly how they fixed the Worm's AI, but I'm guessing it has something to do with the Drox Runners. Just a guess. And then, on the following day, on March 3rd, ArenaNet had yet another update to fix some bugs they found with all the changes they made on the 2nd. These are the bugs they fixed. The skill Bull's Charge was knocking down moving foes when used with any type of weapon, not only with melee weapons. The skill Fever Dreams was incorrectly spreading conditions to allies of both the caster and target, rather than just the enemies of the caster as specified in the skill description. The skill Warrior's Endurance did not correctly match its description in the update notes. Monsters were not responding to damage taken from the skill Balthazar's Aura. Certain elite skills such as Peace and Harmony and Blood is Power could not be captured using a Signet of Capture. Kepkit Marrowfeast was neglecting to guard her nest, and this is actually something that I'm glad I took advantage of before they fixed that, because it was actually, you were able to pull her away from the nest using a ranger and then attack her there without having to worry about the rest of the scarabs. But I guess now they fixed that, so she'll stay there and you have to wipe the whole kit and caboodle out now. The party window was periodically failing to display certain team allies, such as the bodyguards, and the skill monitor was not correctly displaying skill interruption. In this Basics of the Game segment, I'll be talking about the usefulness of having a pet. Now, you can have a pet by either being a primary or secondary ranger and having the skill Charm Animal, which I will discuss in greater depth later during the Skills and Build segment. Now, the pets available to charm in Guild Wars so far are the Melandru Stalker, the Lynx, Black Bear, Moa Bird, Strider, Warthog, Wolf, Dune Lizard, and Black Widow Spider. Now, there's some talk of some new animal pets in factions, but specifics haven't been announced yet. Now, once these animals are charmed, they will follow you and fight with you while you're outside of towns and outposts. Your pet will be permanently linked to you, so even if you remove the charm animal skill from your skill bar and then later put it back on, your animal will remain exactly how it was before you first removed the skill. This also, curiously enough, works with pet names. Like if you name your pet using the command backslash name pet or backslash pet name, that name will stay with your pet and also even carry over onto the next pet if you change pets later on. Now, because it's not possible to charm another pet while you already have one, the only way to get rid of a pet is to talk to Gerald the Tamer in either pre- or post-searing. In pre-searing, he's standing next to Master Ranger Nente in Regent Valley, and in post-searing, he's right outside of Ascalon City. But giving your pet to Gerald is permanent and cannot be reversed. Pets have an evolution rate also that many people aren't even aware of. It has to do with how you play your pet. If you don't rename your pet and keep its default name, like the Stalker, for example, you'll notice that its prefix will change over time. The different levels of evolution are hardy, playful, elder, aggressive, and dire. The amount of damage dealt and the amount of your pet's health is actually affected by the evolution level. For example, the hardy has a negative 2 damage modifier and a plus 60 health modifier. Playful is negative 1 to damage and plus 30 to health. Elder has no modifications to damage or health. Aggressive has plus 1 to damage and negative 30 to health. And finally, Dire has plus 2 to damage and negative 60 to health. Generally, the pet evolves at levels 11 and 15. However, in certain cases, this has varied. Such instances are rare and not fully understood, though leveling up while dead does seem to delay evolution to the next time the pet levels up. Other times, the pet name does not update appropriately. In this case, name your pet, then reset the default name back with backslash name pet and nothing after it. Whichever evolutionary path the pet takes is dependent on the play style of its master leading up to the pet's evolution and is still undergoing research by players. Now, the following factors are believed to not be involved in pet evolution. the amount of healing on the pet, the level of monsters fought, the number of times the pet dies, and the number of foes killed by the pet. But the following three factors are observed to have some correlation with the two offensive evolutions, which are aggressive and dire. Low ratio of damage dealt by pet versus damage by owner, the amount of damage taken by the pet, and the amount of damage taken by the pet without killing the pet. And the following two factors are observed in having some correlation with the two defensive evolutions, which are playful and hardy. And those two factors are high ratio of damage dealt by pet versus damage by owner, and high absolute damage dealt by pet. Now, the elder evolution can be acquired by playing one of the above two playing styles until the pet reaches its first evolution, and then changing back to a different play style, which will reverse the previous play style, to kind of equal it out back to an elder. And here's some other miscellaneous rules and facts about pets. All pets have the same health and armor level based off of their current level. The formula for figuring out pet health is health equals level times 20 plus 80. And the formula for figuring armor level on your pet is armor equals level times 3 plus 20. Now, this is exactly the kind of boring technical stuff that Lady Sinea said she'd never talk about. Also, pets are not affected by skills that affect the whole party. They are considered an ally, and as such, things like Aegis will have no effect on them. Pets are a type of creature according to the spell Edge of Extinction and other skills that target creatures. A pet will always attack the same foe as its owners, sometimes with a delay, and at a rate of one attack every 2 seconds. The exception to this, through player research, is the black bear, which is thought to have the slowest attack rate, hence making it the lowest damage dealer over time. Pets cannot get a death penalty. All animals deal slashing damage, except for the black widows and dune lizards, which do piercing damage. When a pet dies, all of its owner's skills are disabled for 4 seconds. When a pet dies, its location does not show as a gray dot on the compass. Pets cannot be resurrected with monk skills, only with comfort animal, revive animal, or a resurrection shrine. If a pet isn't renamed, its name may change as it levels up and evolves, as I discussed a little bit earlier. And the example being, a Melandru stalker will become a playful stalker, or a hardy stalker, or whatever evolution level you play. Pets gain experience and level up from combat to a maximum level of 20. They will gain experience in this way even while they're dead, with no limit on the range, but will only show the experience level change when within a short distance of the master. Pets do not gain experience from quest rewards or mission completion, and are unaffected by experience scrolls. On the other hand, they level up approximately twice as fast as players from regular experience gain. Now, I have some personal opinions on the pros and cons of having a pet in this game. For a while, my monk priestess Julie had a pet stalker that I used, mainly as a body block when I'd go out and do solo missions in pre and early post. Then later on, I got her a wolf near Yak's Bend. And it was great being able to inflict damage with the pet while I could still heal him. But then at about the Borla's Pass mission or so, the usefulness of the pet quickly wore off. First off, you need entirely too many skills in your skill bar to make a pet useful. So I think if you're dead set on having a pet, you almost have to be a dedicated beastmaster. And the second thing, which is especially bad when you're a monk, is that when your pet dies or when you resurrect it, all of the skills in your skill bar are turned off for 4 seconds, as I mentioned. And that's no fun when you're trying to keep a party alive. Now, on the show notes for today, I'm going to include a link to an article written by a guy named Epinephrine on GuildWarsGuru.com. It's an amazing article with literally everything you'd ever want to know about pets, including locations of where to get them, with photo maps, charts and graphs with statistical data relating to all the facts and figures of AC, health, damage dealt, attack speed, everything. Literally. This guy is insane, but he sure knows his pets. This will be a relatively short skills and build segment this time, simply covering the Ranger Beast Mastery skills, Charm Animal, and Comfort Animal. These are the first two skills you get in pre-searing relating to pets, and you get them both from the Ranger's Companion quest given by Master Ranger Nente in Regent Valley. Now, for charm animal, it's described as charm target animal. Once charmed, your animal companion will travel with you whenever you have charm animal equipped. Now, that's a fairly straightforward description. The energy cost is 10, and the activation time is 10 seconds. You can also get this skill from the Endangered Species quest in Post-Searing Old Ascalon. You can buy it from Sir Bertrand in Ascalon City and Dak in Emberlight Camp. Now, earlier I listed the animals that are charmable with this skill, but there are actually a few friendly animals that you cannot charm. These include the moss spider near Baradin's estate in Pre-Searing, the black bears in Pre-Searing, which actually at one time were tameable, but now they're not. Another one is the rabbit on the hill near the Ashford village in Pre-Searing. Now on to comfort animal. It's described as, you heal your animal companion for 20 to 87 points. If your companion is dead, it is resurrected with 10 to 48% health, and all your skills are disabled for 8 seconds. You obtain this skill from the exact same quests and skill trainers that you get Charm Animal from. It has an energy cost of 10, and an activation time of 1 second, and a recharge time of 1 second. So, that's going to do it for this week's show. I thank you all for listening, and I apologize for the extra long show this week, and there's just so much to cover, but next week I will actually be quite busy and will not be able to do a full show. So, Lady Sinea stepped up to the plate, and she says she'll submit an extra long segment to take up the slack next week. I'll probably still at least do a small intro and maybe a little bit of news, say hi to a few people, things like that, but it will be mostly hers next week. Also, I've decided to hold off on contests until after the preview event. But once the contest is back, it will be a running contest, and I have some amazing new contest prizes I'm going to be adding to the page, including a ton of greens and some really good golds, and so you can look forward to that in the upcoming weeks, also before the next running contest. And of course, I haven't decided exactly where this running contest will be, because it will be in, I believe it will be in 2 or 3 weeks from now, probably about 3 weeks from now, but I'll discuss that more on a later show. So until then, you can email me at sean@guildcast.com. You can email Lady Sinea at ladysinea@gmail.com. You can call the voicemail number at 1-206-666-GWEN, that's 4936. Sign up for the message board and join in the topic debates. And certainly make sure to tell your friends, tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.